Welcome to another reality show hosted by Golden Hawk. Join Golden Hawk as she travels down the rabbit hole exploring many of life's mysteries and adventures. Because here at another reality show, we're not afraid to let our imagination soar and our intuition run wild. So relax, get comfortable, because for the next 2 hours, we're inviting you to open your heart, spread your wings, and fly. And now, here's Golden Hawk.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Yay. Welcome to another reality show. I'm your host, Golden Hawk, and we are moving energy now, my friends. If you're living on the East Coast, I think basically from like Virginia up to Vermont, there is some serious wind blowing our way and some rain and some tornado watching and all that yummy, yummy movement. And I just want to let everybody know that, you know, if you didn't catch it already on my Facebook page, the power went out at my dad's house. I'm at Scott's. And, of course, you know, if the power goes out, I believe the show will continue. I won't have access to the studio or the chat room, but the show will continue on. And if all goes well, what we'd like to do tonight is we're going to talk about the second article. Daniel's going to share his wisdom and all, you know, all that juicy knowledge about portals and gateways and how to travel the multiverse. And then when we kind of wrap it up, what the article had, we're going to open it up to callers. So you guys can ask your questions, you know, directly to the man himself, and then we'll call it a night. So everybody, keep your fingers and toes crossed that, you know, Goldie keeps her power on, and you guys too. I mean, God bless. I don't know where you're calling from, but you know, blessings that everybody stay safe tonight. So on with the show. Let me welcome the most enchanting and one of my favorite people on the planet, Mr. Daniel Jacobs. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Oh, hello there, Goldie. It's so nice to be with you again.
Yeah, I really enjoy our chairs.
We had such fun before, and we have to remember you're so powerful that we've got to keep you from eating rich food because it disturbs the weather.
Well, I mean, the funny part was earlier today I was at my dad's house, and I was sitting in my backyard. The gusts were about 25 to 30 miles an hour. And I'll be honest with you, I am invigorated by storming energy. Several times in my childhood or you know, as a teenager and in my 20s, I've literally gone outside during hurricanes. It doesn't scare me. It invigorates me. And the funny part was I had this ironic, I was like, okay, you know, it was getting towards the end of the afternoon, and that's normally when I come to Scott's house, and I got this feeling. It's like, it was just a bad feeling in my belly that said, don't travel today. Just mm-hmm. stay home and do your show. Yeah. And then, of course, an hour and a half before the show, the lights go out, and I jump in my car in a panic, you know, driving through the heat of the storm. You know, there's trees down everywhere, and, you know, so
that's
I didn't
devotion.
Read that one so
that's
well.
Devotion.
Yeah.
We appreciate that, I'm sure.
No, of course, and I know everybody's looking forward to, you know, to the continuation of truly this fascinating subject, which I believe everybody's really so fascinated with it, is I think there's truly there is a sensation, even if there's not quote-unquote a concrete memory, there is a sensation that we know we are multiverse traveling.
Yeah.
Right? And so with that, I say, okay, let's jump right back in. I loved the way we did it last time. Are you okay if we kind of go, and you just keep taking it as you do, because you were segueing beautiful last time.
So yeah, we just kind of shift gears when the time seems right, and this particular segment of the series is about travel within the multiverse. Talks a little bit more about it. I put on the front of my website at www.reconnections.net on the index page a nice little depiction from the movie Stargate, the original one with James Spader and Kurt Russell, where he steps through the portal, and it gives such a nice depiction of, you know, the disintegration, transport, and reintegration at the new location, and one of the guys, when he gets there, he just goes, wow, what a rush. And I think people sometimes, some people even consider it to be anxiety or panic attacks, when in fact they have just experienced what a rush, you know. Mm. And so some of the symptoms of what we call global acceleration syndrome, which isn't really a medical diagnosis, but it's something I coined. We call it GAS for short. But basically it's all those little symptoms that people have been noticing that have to do with kundalini activation and just the body's response to all of the geophysical, emotional, energetic changes that are happening as we go through this process. Mm. And so it behooves people to notice that some of the things where they say, I feel really weird, or, I don't feel like I'm on solid ground or something, they may be, in fact, in the midst of a portal in travel. And what happens is that the cinematography of the mind is so pristine and superb in its activity that they maintain us in a state of equanimity, even in the midst of huge change, so that it looks like much is really happening, unless it really needs to. And when it really needs to, then it does, and it's quite a leap. And so I wouldn't disqualify a person from thinking that they're traveling through the portals just because they don't have an experience of lifting out of the body or looking down at the body from above or anything like that. There's astral journeying happening all the time, but it's so quick and it's so efficiently administrated by the sub and unconscious mind that we only know about it when we really need to have a helpful anecdote, or when we need to be slapped in the face and say, this is real. And what I appreciate about my experience throughout the years has been I've been given just enough of that, this is real stuff, for my emotional body, that I have a confidence in speaking about it, but I haven't been given so much that I'm feeling like I'm unstable, and so... That's a gift, and it enables me to be able to do my work the way I do my work. And yet there are people who are willing to make the leap and go through the experience of instability so that they can be both object lessons to others, and also that they'll have an exciting story. And there's plenty of exciting stories to tell regarding traversing the portals, as we call it.
Yeah, right on.
The operative term here I'd like to kind of start off with is this word I've been studying lately called liminality.
Okay.
And it's where we get our term subliminal, where that's just below. And the word itself comes from a Latin word that means threshold. And so liminality is this place between waking and sleeping. It's this place between knowing and forgetting. It's this place between remembering and putting it all together in your mind so that it's clear, and then just staying right there, sort of almost like a tantric dance, instead of allowing yourself to fully come on to the knowledge of it. There's a sense of impendingness about it. There's a sense of anticipation that continues on, and it's actually for the soul of the individual quite amusing and exciting. Because we know at that level, we know so many things, but at this level, we're experiencing the idea of discovery again by having this veil of forgetfulness that's wrapped around us. So when we stand at the threshold, or what I called in one of my writings, the gate, you stand at the gate and you are anticipating what's going to be on the other side, but until you go through that gate, close your eyes and step through, there's never really a sense of what's going on. So to be a liminal is to be right on the verge, on the crevasse of either jumping into the void or stepping off onto a new stepping stone and going to a new level of consciousness. I love that quote that says, when we're taken to the edge of a cliff, we're either going to fall in or we're going to be given wings to fly, you know.
Mm.
And that's what's so cool about it. And the thing is, it can't be orchestrated by ego, because many people try that, and sometimes they experience it at their peril. But when they find themselves put there by the universe, when you enter an energy gate initiated by all the levels of your being, not just the ego, there are lessons in store. So the idea of being liminal, to be a bridge person, a gate, not necessarily a gatekeeper, but someone who's knocking at the gate.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of the operative word for today, and we'll talk a little bit more about it as we go along. So where would you like to start? What hits your consciousness? I know you've got such a good grasp of where your audience likes to go.
Thank you. I always just ask from my heart. It does seem that, though, since it's my show, they tend to resonate with the things I'm asking about. I like when you start talking about, you know, the changing of the identification, how, because you talk about it on, you know, there's an even quicker, easier way for a person to move around the multiverse. All he needs to do is change his identification of self.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this is, you know, now, well, let me ask you a question. How many of us find ourselves in situations, you know, that are, you know, we scratch our head and go, you know, God damn, how did I get here? You know, like, and now I'm thinking on some level through what you're sharing right now, that'll help us to understand how we got there as well as how to leave. It's not just about leaving, you know, it's both ends, you know, because we've never left, right? We just keep moving to different spaces, so we might as well understand as much how we got there, which will ultimately teach us how to not be there. You know, it's all kind of
circular. If we think of it
circular.
More of, instead of a journey, it's more of an expansion of perspective, so that you start out with this perspective, this is me and that is you, and this is here and that is there, and this is now and that is then. And, of course, we've had some great discussions in days past about all time being now, simultaneous existence, whereas we used to deal a lot with this concept of reincarnation. Now we're beginning to integrate as a society, at least as a metaphysical community, the idea of multiple incarnation, simultaneous parallel existence. So that you and I exist not just as individuals here, but there are fragments of us that exist in many different dimensions at many different times. We are all of it in essence, although we are not always aware of the others because they, like us, are sealed tight with their different veils of separation so that they can experience whatever the focus they have. It's almost like you become a committee of selves, and you take off in different directions, and then you say, okay, we're going to all do our exploration, and then we're all going to meet back here at a certain time. And then we'll sit around the fire.
Clearly, but from the wind, wait, I have to interrupt. Clearly from the wind, we're meeting in the backyard right now. Just letting you know. Sorry.
Well, you know, we're all pretty windy anyway. We get to talking and sharing our stuff. And if we had a big bonfire out there, I'm sure it would be leaping and jumping and trying to stay
lit.
Fire
might not be a good thing to play with right now.
Yeah, starting to be, it wouldn't be lit, you know, for very long maybe.
That's true, too.
So multiple incarnation makes us aware of the fact that I don't really have to leave here to be there. A part of me is already there.
Right on.
And so when I begin to integrate the idea that I am this and I am that, when we started doing oneness back in 91, when I first started channeling the reconnections, we would have these kind of things of, oh boy, now they're doing that for me. These people are doing that for me. And then suddenly the guides step in and say, no, they're doing it as you. That's you over there. And this is us over here. So they term this interdimensional transposition, and basically what's changing is your key point or what your definition is of self. So when you when they film TV shows, for example, they've got camera one, camera two, camera three. Then there's a director's booth where the guy's up there looking at all the different screens, and he sees what camera one says and what camera two says and so on and so forth, and he segues from one to the other, you know, as he switches views and so on. And in fact, dimensions, when we talk about dimensions, we're really talking about measurements. So if camera one is 6 feet away from the object of whatever they're filming, and then camera two is maybe 12 feet away, they're two different dimensions, two different viewpoints of that same experience. And when they switch viewpoints and it expands their whole experience of the whole thing, we as the audience get a chance to avail ourselves of that diversity and that technology. It makes it so much deeper and meaningful for us when we do that. So just changing your identification of self from one reality context to another, that's one. That's an upgrade when people begin to think of that. Simultaneous now is an upgrade from the old past, present, future idea. That's all there. It gives color and texture to our experience in 3D. But when we get into these transportals, you know, they're right outside the realm of the reality box, you know, so you can literally leap out of one reality box and move along that new concept, and all of a sudden you're in the other one. To actually have emotional and even physical sensations and experiences when we do that, that's the domain of what we call the experientials. There's conceptuals and there's experientials, and those are the kind of the extremes if they have only one major. And then there's the integration of the two, where you're able to phase shift back and forth between being conceptual about it and then being in the experience, where you don't want to think, you just want to feel and do it.
So that's actually a dimensional shift, to thinking to feeling?
No. Well, it could be. I mean, it's certainly a shift of perceptual technology. It's like...
Okay, right. I see.
It's like it's like a color gel that you add to the... to the camera when you bring emotion into the picture. Makes me think of that movie where the movie started out in black and white, Pleasantville, where the movie starts out in black and white and then people start gaining emotion and they start coloring in the movie, you know?
Yeah, right on. Right
and
on.
If
That's
we
a
could,
great analogy.
We could look at the metaphysical community, we would be able to see the experientials versus the people who are more conceptual. And let's face it, it's all necessary. Everybody's got a place in the process. And then hopefully we're able to trade places and share each other's perspectives. And in fact, through the experience of transphysicality, you can literally leap in your definition from one body to another, providing that you have this capacity of neutrality that we talk about. When we get to the elevator of the multiverse, we talk about that process. We actually talked about that quite a bit in detail about it, but the neutrality.
Well, you can refresh it. Yeah. Okay. Good.
You can only enter another person's body during this time of oneness integration when you become one with that body. So there's sort of a guardian spirit that keeps you out unless there's a reason for the two of you to come together on some reason of sharing perspectives. And that's all done by contract and permission. If you want to look at it that way, again, it's all simultaneous. But you know, we like to lay it out so we say, well, here are the steps in which it happened. But the steps are all simultaneous too. But there is a technology to it, and a mental framework in which you could observe it all. I mean, it can either be as simple or as ornate as you want it to be. That's what's so cool about the multiverse. You can either boil everything down to one idea, or you can spread it out and say it's a unity of a complexity, and you can just look at every little piece and have fun with that. It just depends on what your orientation is, you know?
Yeah, right on. Even though, speaking personally for myself, I find the journey that I'm most focused on is just integrating me in this body, let alone someone else's body. I mean, I'm just trying to get integrated in my own body.
And that can actually, transportals can assist in that, because the other person is an aspect of you in your perceptual universe. So it's not that they're doing it for you or with you, it's they're doing it as you. the Reconnections have this part of there called Levels of Self, where they lay out the universe, a person's individual perceptual universe in such a way so that every level represents a part of yourself. The physical body and everything related to the physical body is analogous to the conscious mind.
Okay.
And then everything that comes in contact with that physical body and interacts with it on some kind of a level consciously is symbolic of the subconscious mind. And everything that can be observed by the physical body but is not necessarily either aware of it or interacting with it is symbolic of the unconscious. So that you can literally, your subconscious mind and unconscious mind literally walks by you every day. But because of this this weight we carry of the supposition of separation, we don't notice it, nor do we use normal dream interpretation principles to figure out what's playing out in front of us.
Huh.
So when you, but again, before you can begin doing that, before you'll ever be comfortable doing that, there has to be a sense of a sanctity about just your own consciousness. You know that I'm safe here and I'm not going to be shaken from this. In the Jewish tradition, when people start studying Kabbalah, they discourage them from doing anything until they're sort of middle aged, settled in their business, and settled in their families, because Kabbalah, in that tradition, it can be so ungrounding and fantastical that it could shake them, and they have a real respect for community and for family and for stability.
Right on.
So
right
they
on.
Discourage people from studying Kabbalah unless they really feel they're ready and grounded. And even then, you know, it's kind of like, whoa, you know how it is when we have those experiences.
Yeah, totally. Want to do that one more time?
Whoa.
Right on. Yeah, no, that's interesting that it's actually, you know, they speak of it knowing that the process is going to take you, you know, it's going to unground you. So, you know, because, like, I know my life unfolded for me that when I started doing some of the early works of finding myself and going through, you know, some early deaths of my personality, that was the time that I was living off of credit cards. You know, and that worked for me because as a nanny, I could have never been, you know, I was in very unstable emotional states often, you know, and to be responsible for, you know, small children, you really kind of want to be somewhat on point anyways. And, but it, you know, and I really did feel like it felt divine, you know, it's like, all right, it cost me the check mark that says, yep, I went bankrupt. But for those 3 years, you know, it was the gift for me to find myself and let myself fall apart without having the structural, you know, without being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
and again, when
that.
We go back to the indigenous societies, the shaman chosen by the community is often supported through those changes and those instabilities. Because they expect that he's downloading software that they're not going to be dealing with, but he'll be available to them at some point in the future.
Mm.
But because the indigenous societies, we talked about that 7 years
we did. Yep,
last time, and how the community just recognizes a young shaman when they come in. Our community right now, and the Native Americans have been telling us this for years, they say, you've become so alienated from the earth and from yourselves, basically, through the use of commerce and technology, that you're not aware of these changes when they take place around you. And you wouldn't know a genius if it came up and kissed you on the lips.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got our young people sometimes who are making those choices, or not just young people who are middle-aged or whatever, when they feel they reach that space, they make choices to give themselves that kind of leeway. And, you know, we are, as a community, enjoying the result of your time of falling apart so you could pull yourself back together.
Right.
And your service is your way of expressing that love, of putting that through. And MasterCard and those guys, you know, that, I don't know what they say about what
grateful.
We're talking about.
I'm truly grateful.
But again, you know, there's a lot worse things that could happen to their money than putting in a cool radio show that talks to people when they need to hear stuff. And
yeah,
so, and hosting that, keeping and staying steady with that, you know, letting your passion show. Nowadays,
yeah,
you know, it's all, you know, roll up your sleeves, do hard work, get something, build up your cash, build up your possessions, and so on. What about the soul? What are we doing about our soul? And then what kind of a building is going on in there? That's still very marginal in the society. Various people are doing it in their own ways. It's certainly not rare, but it's a lot more challenging. Maybe it needs to be for people to make the sacrifices necessary in terms of comfort and, you might say, just feelings of security.
Oh, definitely.
Because I'm sure every time you pulled out the credit card and you start going, something's going to happen eventually with this. I don't know what it is, but I'm just trusting. I'm doing what I think I'm going to do.
And yeah, well, I was actually pretty clear it was going to be Nisara or it was going to be bankruptcy. I mean, I truly had never had the intention to pay it back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was a clarity that has pissed off many people that I've shared that with. You know, and I'm like, well, I didn't take your money. I'm not quite sure why it's pissing you off. But, you know, people get pissed off for all different reasons, and I'm used to that. But I do believe that, you know, if there is shamanic awakenings happening within somebody, you know, that get creative, you know, because I think there's a lot of support we have on the planet if we're willing to, you know, step outside of the box of good girl, bad girl, good girl, good boy, you know, because I didn't have guilt over not returning that money. And I do find it to be, you know, that was my journey that, you know, to experience, you know, I was experiencing a lot of metaphysical. I went on a spaceship during those 3 years. I found my galactic self in those three. You know, I mean, there really was a lot of paradigm shifting. And I guess phase shifting, which is, let's talk more about phase shifting. So
yeah, the classic idea of phase shifting happens between a person's idea of themselves as an individuated being and the God self, or what you would think of as the overself. And there's various levels of even that, so that you have like a four-gear car. You know, there's different shifts that you can do. Various systems have come out to actually lay out what the different phases are that go between what you might call heaven and the God self and the earthly self and even the underworld. There's a whole thing going to have to do with that, too.
Mm.
And it all has to do, if it's all one, it all has to do with different dimensions or textures or colors of that one. And sometimes we need to go deep in the pit of ourself and experience the depth of passion. And sometimes we need to go high and light and experience the ecstasy of complete release. It's to be able to phase shift back and forth. Usually, traditionally, it has to do with experiencing ourselves as one with everything and everyone. Many of one versus one of many.
Mm.
And so it's interesting that it's equally important to have the feeling of diversity and individuation as it is to have the experience of oneness. A lot of people are trying to dump out the individuation. They're trying to get rid of the ego. When the ego, you know, it isn't meant to drive the car. It's definitely meant to sit at the edge in the side of the bus and take pictures and enjoy the trip. But there are many people who have become so disgusted with egoic type things that they've got death to the ego type things, and you see that come up in a lot of literature.
Oh yeah.
I've always seen the ego as an important component, and before the ego will ever let go and allow other forces to come in, there must be some assurance of the fact that the ego, as well as everyone else, is forever, and always has been, always will be. I love the expression someone says: the eyes that you through which you look at this world now also witness the laying down of the foundations of this world.
Mm.
It's just they look differently on your face, perhaps, but they're those same perceptual experiences. It's just been narrowed down and focused into this type of an experience here. So anyway, as we allow ourselves the comfort and security, I'm never going to be lost. I remember once when I first started channeling the reconnections, I was sitting up late one night and I had one of the usual questions that people actually ask a lot when we have gatherings. They say, if I begin channeling my expanded self or other parts of myself, is there a possibility I'll lose myself? So I remember asking the guides at one point, and I expected fully that they would say, oh, no, don't worry, we're going to hang on to you, you know, the old silver cord and all that sort of stuff. But I remember one of them saying to my heart and mind, because I don't hear voices as much as I just experience kind of a knowing that comes in.
Mm.
I remember them, I said, what if I lose myself in the process of channeling you? And they said, well, there could be an upside to that. If you lose yourself, you won't be here to know that you're gone.
Not the answer you were expecting, I'm sure.
I said, thanks, guys. That really made me feel good.
Exactly. Wow.
But we do get the idea that that oftentimes when we get into those little conundrums and concerns, that the people on the other side of the veil are laughing their collective asses off and having a good time at it.
Right.
But that's the entertainment part for them. I mean, they have to have some part of the picture too. So let them laugh. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, and I mean literally, you know, in the past week, my understanding of, like, I've been flooded lately with an experience of the divine feminine. And what's so interesting is during my times of these experiences, which some have happened in the forest, some have happened in dream state, it really is clear to me that when I'm in that complete unconditional expression of the divine feminine, it's not like it's added to where I am now. My whole experience shifts. The things I question shift. The things I'm focusing on shift. You know, it really is a completely different dimension. And it appears, from what I've experienced so far, everything in that dimension is also saturated with the divine feminine. So, you know, there was no tugging. There was no pulling. There was no focusing on the other, even though others were in the room. We were all, like, very consciously self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it just kind of, I'm like, I'm getting that true experience of when people say the journey from our head to our heart, you know, is a long one. I'm really understanding it's not even on the same dimensional plane. I mean, like, from
oh, no, well, it can be, but it doesn't necessarily have to. It's like you can make your own yellow brick road. And it can go any different direction. I'm using an analogy because you've got a hurricane coming. Hi, you know, Dorothy. But,
all right, Toto. I'm calling you Toto then.
And, you know, I'm just looking at a particular part here in part two where it says, some people are primarily visual, others travel on waves of sound, and still others take sentient journeys through space and time. A leap through a portal can happen over several minutes, or it can be completed in the twinkling of an eye. I might also add that some people go through portals over a course of years. In other words, there's portals within portals. Some people register time loss, while others edit out all memory of the trip. And that's entirely congruent with what you need at the time. Do you need more proof in the metaphysical realities? Then you'll have more of a knowledge of the trip. It's interesting to note that there have been many times when I've had a sense that something happened, but no details about it.
Mm.
And so I'll sit down and actually do an automatic writing in which I describe, well, where did I go? What happened? And if you don't edit yourself or allow your conscious reasoning mind to get in the way, oftentimes your sub and unconscious mind will pour out exactly what it was. The thing is making yourself believe that actually happened, because people doubt it. They say, I'm just making this up. And I go, well, yeah, you're making it all up. You make up the world, you know.
Right.
Your particular reality is, you know, you create your own reality. So you're making it all up. So why single this out and say this isn't real? Everything is real everywhere it appears, but not everything is relevant. you know. Mm. So we edit out the things that don't particularly have to do with our particular itinerary or assignment. And then we focus on the things that are. So we have these folks who are more visual, so they'll experience it that way. Some people will hear in their music or some kind of a whooshing sound. Some people will hear some description in their head, even worded descriptions of what they've been doing. You just got back from Hawaii, you know, or something like that.
Right, right. Authors, I would imagine, probably often hear, you know, seeing as they write things down, so.
Yeah. And they're talking, when they talk about the phase shifting, they're talking about the going back and forth between the expanded self and the finite self or the individual. The reconnections, their definition of what they are as a soul group in my universe is we represent all those parts of your expanded self that you had to forget about in order to become Daniel.
Mm.
And we've never been very far from you, just far enough. And within our ranks are contained all of these necessary bridge concepts that will connect you with what's called the multiverse. And once we give you those one at a time, you'll build your own bridges to wherever it is you want to visit, you know.
Nice.
Some of them feel like islands, and some of them feel like mountains, and some of them feel like pits you got to climb down into. I love some of those visual experiences where people walk down in their mind. They're using their imagination down winding stairs, down winding stone stairs where there's torches and various things. I've heard some wonderful visualization processes with people as they go deep down into their subconscious. They say, and then you walk into a room and there's a table, and on the table there are certain objects. What are those objects? Immediately the people start saying, well, I see a cup, and I see a book, and I see a painting. Well, what's in the painting, you know? And you just, it's like a sweater, you know? You take a piece of yarn, and you keep pulling it, and pulling it, pulling it. And before you know it, you know, you don't have a sweater anymore. You just have this long string of experiences and events and remembrance.
Right on, right on. Great visual. Well, and speaking of mountains, the next paragraph is about, which, I mean, I'm kind of interested in you sharing, you know, because we have these experiences. The next paragraph is moving mountains, and it's, you know, we all have, well, maybe haven't all of us, but many of us have heard, you know, with the faith of a mustard seed, you could move a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do believe that there's something within the seekers in all of us. There's something about that statement, you know, that just gnarls at me. And for me, the desire to have an understanding about that, and I guess, and ultimately to have a mastering of that. So if you could kind of share what you're...
So the key phrase here is the physical dimensions are becoming a primary meeting place for the celestial and the internal realms, also known as the underworld. So you have this in the middle, and you've got the underworld, and then you've got the celestial realms. And so it's not just, ascension is not just about bunches of people going up. Humankind is also in the process of bringing heaven down to earth as well, and also bringing hell up too. And you've often heard about hell raisers. Well, we've got them. And
you're talking
to one. They're busy about doing what they need to do, and there are gifts. When we talked about spiritual gifts for people, there are gifts that are constructive, and then there are gifts of chaos that people have. We all know them, you know. Somebody walks into a room and immediately things start falling off the wall, and, you know, vases get broken and people get insulted, and the person goes, what did I do? I don't know. What are you talking about? And it's just a chaotic gift that they bring to a picture, and a lot of people say, oh, no, here she is, or here he is again.
Mm.
And really what they're doing is just simply hell-raising, bringing stuff up so that it can be looked at and released if necessary, or reframed is another way to put it. Because something that sometimes has an ugly face at one moment can be beautiful in the next, as we saw in that wonderful movie, The Elephant Man.
Right on.
You know,
right on.
Where she, the opera, I guess she was an opera singer or a dancer, beautiful woman, invited him to dinner, and he was sitting there reading her from Romeo and Juliet. And he said something about it, about being ugly or something. She says, "You're not ugly." She says, "You're Romeo." And she had reframed him completely. She didn't see what other people saw anymore. And that's the whole Beauty and the Beast story, all kinds of things there. So we have the possibility then of bringing the celestial realms down. Now here we talk about extraterrestrials.
Okay.
Here we talk about archetypes. Here we talk about gods, goddesses, you know, avatars coming into our experience.
Right.
Angels, you know.
Yeah.
And it's however you want to depict it in terms of that. They go up in vibration. You have access to logic, logos, the realm of pure idea. Moving down the scale, you bring you into realms of pure emotion and passion, pathos. In oneness, neither supersedes or dominates the other. A guardian spirit guarantees this. At present, your planet is moving rapidly towards what is called the edge of here and now, which is neither up nor down, but a point between. From this point, your various delegations will have access to everything and be limited to nothing. So the very best of the beast and the very beast of the best all sit at the same table, and they spread out their wares, you know. And another analogy of an energy gate has always been this idea of the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe that C.S. Lewis wrote when he had that closet in his playroom. And you would go into the closet, and you go right through into an alternative dimension. And all those wonderful fantasy stories that came from that. I love the movie Shadowlands, where the little boy is actually in C.S. Lewis's attic, and he sees the wardrobe sitting there, and he opens it up, and he sees there's just coats in it. And he goes, "I knew it. I knew it. Just a closet." And he goes, no, nothing's just what it is. It's at least that. But it has the potential to be so much more. But you have to look at it with soft eyes. You have to open yourself through the gateway of your imagination and realize that the travel that takes place through that gateway, it doesn't take always the whole physical body with it. Sometimes it just takes your astral body. Mm. And that, but when you come back, your physical body feels the difference.
Absolutely.
But then we have these things called technology where we're putting together men walking on the moon and taking off for Mars and, you know, taking pictures of planets. All of those are things, too. The more we make physical that which was once just metaphysical, the more the gateways open up for more and even more fantastical things out there have yet to be discovered. I think people might be afraid that we just might explore and then we find you've reached the end of the Internet, you know. This is it. Mm-hmm. Now go get a life. I remember that. Somebody came that through and says, "You've reached the end of the Internet. This is the last website. Now turn off your thing and go out and get a life." But really, it's just like the Internet. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. And no matter how much gets realized here, there's always more. Always, always more.
Mm.
Which, you know, is going to keep us busy for quite a while, like eternity.
Well, right. But don't you believe that there is... on some level, an end to the game of the duality? Does that?
Well, there's a place where the duality funnels into a unity, but then there's
right.
also places where the unity fragments out again into the duality. In other words, you can go through those gateways. Like that's what they call the eye of the needle.
Hmm.
That you go through, but you can also pull the thread out and, you know, separate it out the strands and refragment. Again, it's whatever your soul's evolution. And again, I'm speaking in terms of sequence, you know, past, present, future, as opposed to one simultaneous now. And we really do need to get freer and freer from this current context of past, present, and future before we can appreciate what that's really about.
Mm.
And another person who is a real patron for people who traverse the portals is Hermes, who was the messenger god in the olden gods, you know, for Zeus. He was a bastard child of Zeus and one of the Muses. And he had wings on his feet and on his helmet, which indicates, you know, higher and lower can go wherever they need to. He can go down, he can go up.
Oh, right on.
Go wherever
right
he
on.
Needs
okay.
to go. And
right.
he's the patron also of alchemy, which is transformation from one thing to another. It looks like this, but it becomes this, you know, and that's what's really cool. And so they talk about being hermetically sealed, and that takes place through a buffer zone or a kind of decontamination chamber, if you want to use a rather loaded term. When people are working with radioactivity, they'll come out of that room into a sort of a middle place where they get washed off and so on and so forth, so they don't bring too much of that through. And that's the idea of, you know, something being hermetically sealed so that you can have the same kind of flexibility he has in moving from the high to the low and all the places in between. They call this energy that leaks through from the various expanded realms, they call it radiance. And they call, when it doesn't get completely extricated from a person who's doing traveling, when you come in with it on you,
okay,
that's where you have this experience of feeling buzzing. You're like buzzing, and you've got you know how you walk into a room and you're blowing out lights and things like that. That's where, because you've got some of that radiance on you. There's a whole other thing that we could talk about. It's pretty relevant to now, but they say, you know, everything that's going on in the Middle East in terms of warring and strife and so on is not really politically motivated at all, but actually it's a result of energy gates that are opening. You know, the Middle East in that area is sort of like the cradle of civilization, as Africa is the gateway into the underworld. Unknown realms. And so these different places have experienced this radiance opening of the gates, and people literally get radiance poisoning. It's like when the sailors used to go by the island that had the sirens on it, and they would be driven insane by the singing of the sirens in mythology of old.
You know,
Indiana Jones would say, "Don't look, Marion." When they open the Ark of the Covenant, he goes, close
right,
your eyes,
right.
Don't look. Same thing, close your ears, don't listen. It'll drive you nuts. Well, there's a lot of people out there that are just, they're like kids in a household where the mother and father are getting a divorce, and the kids don't understand what's happening, and they don't know what's going to happen, and so they're just hitting each other and running around in circles because they have to express this kind of energy that's been leaking through these energy gates. As these energy gates open around the world, the same kind of phenomena is happening. And the guides are saying most of it is bioenergetic in its origin. And when you become aware of that it's not necessarily a peace that's negotiated as much as it's a realization that's attained, then people are able to rise above the petty issues that seem to be motivating these things, and they start to function from a state of knowingness. Oh, that's what this is. We are expanding as a race, sometimes too fast. We're going into what Alvin Toffler refers to as future shock, because things are happening and energetically. I'm sort of rambling here, but energetically.
No, I love it. Daniel, you're doing great. Keep going.
Okay.
Yeah.
Future shock is... he wrote that book in 77, I think. And he was describing 30 years down the line or 40 years down the line what we'd be experiencing. There's still copies of it out there people can get. It's really well worth the read. Future Shock by Alvin Toffler. There's such wisdom in it. I love it.
Nice, thank you. Yeah.
So this radiance that comes through the energy gates, it can also function like rocket fuel. I mean, there are people who get lit up and they become ecstatic and willing and open and they just do things. And there are other people who feel it like an insult and they experience fear and anxiety and closing. And it's all based on the particular orientation of the soul at that point. And we were having a discussion online in one of the forums with some people who were obviously from the Islamic tradition who've been so insulted by this movie that was out that insulted Muhammad. And we were trying to talk about you know, all the ramifications of what all that really means. And when you actually look at the movie, I saw the movie that this guy made. It's like it's an amateurish kind of a mishmash of just, it's sort of like Mad TV, if you want to look at it
that
way.
Okay.
But it was
okay.
It was so offensive to them that they just used it as a tool to be able to release more and more stuff. And I was saying to these guys who were, I don't know whether from Iran or from one of the, you know, one of that region, very intelligent,
right,
very sentient people, willing to talk, which I thought was
okay.
Great.
Okay. Nice.
And I basically was saying, you know, a lot of this isn't what it appears to be. It's because everybody's sort of like a powder keg inside right now, either wanting to break out into ecstasy or wanting to break out into rage, you know, and
right,
all depends on how it's... And we've been suppressed for so long, it's like you can't... Now that the top is coming off the bottle, you can't get the genie back in there anymore. He's gotten too big.
Right.
And they want to go back. You know, they were talking about, we need to go back to the old ways. I said, well, we may circle back there, but I think we're only going to circle back long enough to say, nope, we're beyond this. And then we'll quickly speed back up and design new paradigm for all of our needs in the present rather than constantly wanting to go back, because it's so scary to go forward. I mean, my gosh, what lies ahead? It's much easier to say, I want to go back there. I'd like to go back to when I was a kid sometimes, where I didn't have any of this responsibility or any of this concern or awareness of how the world works, you know. But only, you know, if you go back there, you'd be bored, you know, knowing what you know.
And not just bored. You really, you can't turn off a knowing. You know, the awarenesses that I'm experiencing, if I was to try and go back, you know, like for me, into like the land of drugs, I just couldn't do that right now. You know, I simply don't have the desire or the need to escape that through that measure, through any measure, to be honest. Because I'm finding through my awareness, it's giving me, you know, kind of the sea legs to ride this journey out naturally.
You know, yeah, and where you were maybe experimenting with drugs at one point, I went through 10 years of fundamentalism.
Okay.
Where everything was found in a book and everything was definite, and you know, you just had to have a chapter and verse to back yourself up, and you could argue the reasons for the faith that you hold inside yourself, and everybody was lost unless they got this idea, and you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah,
that lasted,
could you go
as
back
long
there?
As it lasted, and I finally kicked myself out of that box, you know. And
yeah,
not that
I didn't
take a lot of that energy with me, because there's a lot of good in that. I mean, a lot of good stuff in that. But the thing is that if you just stay with that and you don't add any of the other stuff in, then it's like being on an all alkaline diet, you know. Pretty soon it's just like blah, you know.
Yeah.
So you have to have that mixture. But what the mixture is for each person varies, you know. They
right
usually
on.
Say about 80-20 alkaline over acid, but not necessarily all the time. Sometimes
right.
You just got to have pizza, Goldie.
I'm with you, Daniel. Believe me, as I sit here with my package of M&Ms. I humbly agree. And I'll be honest with you, I have seen some of the most angry, unbalanced people are the raw food channelers. Two of them that I know offhand, that they were very, their ego, they were egomaniacs, to be honest, and they were just ungrounded, you know, where they were unable to see anything beyond their perception. And I was like, boy, have a hamburger, man, and loosen up. Cook yourself something. I don't know, you know, I totally agree that anything all the way to one side, in my humble opinion, is just as out of balance, and it doesn't matter which side you're on, whether you're in the underworld or whether you're in the celestial world. You know, the Zen is in the middle. The alchemy is in the middle. You know, can we dance between both? That to me is
And sometimes, you know, you'll go to an extreme, and then you're aware of the fact that the facility is there to go to the other extreme if you were to need to in order to keep the boat afloat.
Yeah,
because if you
right
go to
on.
One extreme and stay there, the boat eventually tips over one way or the other, and you fall in. And falling in means where you cannot see the other side. So that if you were in a debate and there's a pro and there's a con, the most powerful place in the debate is where you can comprehend the other side and see where a person could believe that, whether you or not you prefer to go with it or not. There's
right.
there's a healthy respect for the fact that it deserves to be there. But when a person gets to a place where they're condemning the other side, which is kind of what's happening, you reach this polarization that's
yes.
happening politically right now.
Oh, yeah.
A demonization of one's other. Then you know that something's going to happen. Something's going to come along to bring the boat right. We don't know what it is. I know there are some people who are saying that E.T. has to land, and then we'll all get together, if only to fight him. Or hug him one way or the other. We have to find out.
Right.
Depending on which sci-fi movie you've ever watched.
or see all of the above.
Yes, exactly. Maybe we can do a little bit of each.
Yeah, that would be my choice. So, this is a good place to let's segue into the blueprint for human consciousness.
Mm-hmm. And so you're. You're looking at what we call, I love the expression, energy and anatomy.
Mm.
And I was even discussing this with some friends today.
Nice.
I love the analogy of the computer as being a model for how consciousness works. Now, it pales in comparison to what actual consciousness can do.
Right on.
But you can use the analogy. It's almost like a universal language that everybody on the planet has become familiar with in one way or the other.
Right.
So if you use expression point and click, or highlight, cut and paste, or delete,
right.
you know, that kind of a thing, and
yeah.
realize that instead of a mouse, you simply have your focus of awareness as you move it across the plane. And if you look at a picture or an object or a person, and you look at that picture and point and click means that you study it, you open it up to your inner self to really identify with what it says. I love Carl Jung's words on this. He talks about active imagination in some of his writings. Carl Jung, as you know, was a perfect bridge between the academic community and the mystical community. I mean, he would shudder if he was called a mystic to anyone. But many people think of him as a mystic. He was the one-time student of Freud who broke away from the all-sex theory and began to work with dreams and symbols, and he even did his own rudimentary forms of channeling, which are really, really cool.
Nice.
But he says here, active imagination, as the term denotes, means that the images have a life of their own, and that the symbolic events develop according to their own logic. That is, of course, if your conscious reason does not interfere. When you concentrate on a mental picture, it begins to stir. The image becomes enriched by details. It moves and develops. Each time, naturally, you mistrust it and have the idea that you've just made it up. That is merely your own invention. But you have to overcome that doubt because it's not true. We can really produce precious little by our conscious mind. All the time we are dependent upon things that literally fall into our consciousness. We depend entirely upon the benevolent cooperation of our unconscious. So when we think of logging on to the inner net, that is the real reality of which the internet is simply a sort of a crude imitation. We're talking about a neural and psychic network that is a vast, vast cross-time, cross-space, integrating potentially networks that have never even been dreamt of yet.
I agree.
And then when you look at the mosaic design of putting together websites, where you click on a hyperlink and it takes you down a level, gives you additional insights considering the hyperlinked word, and then takes you down more levels. It's like walking down that stone stairway, looking at all the different levels of that same concept that was there highlighted in the original article or whatever you're reading.
Right.
That's true of everything. So if a person looks at a piece of art with what the reconnections refer to as soft eyes, where you look a little off to the side and you let things get just a little blurry.
Okay.
And you sort of stop asking yourself, what is it? And you rather say, where does this take me? What does this bring up for me? Now you're on the brink, or you're becoming liminal to the idea of tonal communication as opposed to verbal or logical communication. That's where you pick up so many different sides of a thing besides just what it is and what it does.
Well, the third dimension.
Yeah, and when you look at a piece of art, it's a two-dimensional thing. The third dimension is usually produced by the actual reaction of the viewer.
Oh, right on. Okay.
And so
right
the third dimension, it became third dimensional because the artist poured himself into it, onto that two-dimensional plane, and then it becomes three-dimensional again when the observer, the audience, goes by and says, what does that mean to me? What does that bring up for me? What do you think of when you do that? And, of course, anyone who's creative, anyone who's birthed a piece of art or music or writing, prose, poetry, realize when you release it upon the world, you're basically licensing the world to make their own conclusions about what it says and to do with it what they will. And people are always arguing about taking things out of context or so on and so forth, but all that is it's a desire, once again, to go back to the logical, rational chains and bondage that we've been staying in to keep ourselves straight for the last couple of thousand years. And now we're moving into a more liquid environment, like the Aquarian Age is the water bearer pouring the water out of the container and allowing it to flow free, the M-ocean, as it were, floating in the M-ocean. and then all bets are off. It's whatever you see, whatever you do. And Picasso, you look at his art, or Salvador Dali, or, you know, any of the kinds of things where you get impressionistic and you get to abstraction, all these things, you know, they're gateways into realms of color and power that some people are not able to handle, so they don't go there.
Well, I want to ask you something that's kind of a little bit of a different perspective on what you were just speaking of. What's your feelings on, like, let's say, a good friend of mine wrote a book. And we actually speak of the book as having its own consciousness of that it's playing a part in what bookstores that she's going to get the book into to do book signings. And
of course, yes. A book becomes a person. You know, it has its own identity. Just like when two people come together in a relationship or a communication, there's always a third person that is the synthesis of the two of them.
Right,
that's guiding
okay.
the interaction. The okay. book becomes a person as the various elements are poured into it, and it's like a child. And just like a child,
exactly.
it's taken out into the world, and it begins to do what it does, and people meet it and are affected by it. My developmentally special son, Jeffrey, is 39 now, 39 going on, you know, if you were to think about his orientation, maybe about 12.
Okay.
But he's every bit of the love and passion and curiosity of that age, but he's got a lot of the stability and experience of the 39-year-old, so he gets to do things. And, by the way, he's one of those shamanic beings who does get extra support from society because
nice.
Of his, quote, disability.
Right,
but
right.
this disability that he has to be able to go into and beyond the realms of imagination, enable him to be a great gift. And he loves to meet new people. He'll hang out at malls and he'll just talk to people because he's just hungry for that. And when we go out, I walk with him. It's like I'm Jeffrey's dad. He's not my son. I'm his dad. You know, because he's the popular one. Everybody's kind of, oh, hi, Jeffrey. Okay, here's my dad. Oh, yeah, good. Fine. Hi, Jeffrey. How you doing? You know.
Right on.
He is like a little ambassador. It's the same thing with a book. And,
any
kind of creation, they become a little child and they grow up and they have their own life too. And we have to do with that, those things, we have to let them go.
You unplugged me, Scott. Sorry.
Got to let them have their life.
Yeah, no, that, and I think that's a, okay, I got unplugged computer-wise, but if you guys
did the power
sound,
go out?
The power didn't go out, the plug got pulled out of the computer.
Oh, okay, you got unplugged. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, right. You know, every now and then, I think it is good to unplug. There's something healthy about that. But you guys should all be okay with the chat room. But if it doesn't, I would say just reboot and everything will be okay. So,
which is what you're doing, right?
I'm reconnecting to the server at the moment, yes. I'm back on. Thank you, baby.
And you're just wanting to do that just so that you can illustrate the computer analogy that we've been saying about... logging on and logging off. That's the good thing about computer technology, see, is you can turn it on and you can turn it off. You can unplug the thing and walk out and say everything's fine, whereas a lot of the things that we carry inside ourselves, they can be turned on and off too, but it requires a degree of discipline and a certain mental maturity, spiritual and you know, a sense of wisdom regarding when we allow ourselves to go into that place. Or do we just allow ourselves to be swept away at any time? And some people have a hard time, you know, hanging onto their balloon without floating up, you know.
Yeah, right on.
But we use this expression on this page of logging on to the multiverse, just like you were going to go into AOL or you were going to go to any network. You would log on to it and through perhaps passwords, you know. See, we use the passwords concept or those kinds of things, code keys. What's really good about this software that we carry in our head, and again, I'm using those analogies because it works, the software that runs in our head is that it's all safety sealed based on how rapidly our energy vibrates. So you've probably, no doubt, experienced times of high acceleration where you felt like you knew everything and you had just been given the biggest aha in the universe. And then a couple days later, you go through a few low spots and you say, what was I even thinking? I can't contact that site anymore. They seem to have taken it down.
Right.
And really, it's just because the seal closes. When your energy goes down, it usually means you're supposed to be focusing here, becoming more grounded and reconnecting to the earth plane because you've got things to do here. Phase shift down, in other words.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have actually felt that particular time. Like, I have felt myself shift in a relationship where it literally, and I've described it to Alana as, it's just the switch gets turned off and I'm just no longer attracted to the person I'm in the relationship with. It doesn't happen so much now as it did in my 20s. But that's exactly what it would feel like. The website was down. I'd be done. It'd be no rhyme or reason. You know, the person didn't do anything wrong. It would just be a shift in my energy.
Or theirs. One of the two. Again, when we talk about relationships, we have to go back into a duality because now you've divided your aspect of self into two. And there's a whole thing on relationships about how that works, and that's the way I want to go there now. But the idea is you have to use that mindset when you're dealing in relationships. There has to be sharing. There has to be listening. There has to be giving. There has to be taking. And all that seems to be very subject to seasons of readiness and lack thereof.
Mm.
And it would be just wonderful if people allowed themselves the freedom to move fluidly when the time feels right, and then to withdraw when the time doesn't. And there would be a natural respect for the times and seasons of a relationship, so that divorce, for example, would not be considered a failure, but rather a completion of a journey.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Now, the thing is that when we, what I've found personally, and I've been, you know, have connections and relationships throughout my life, I've never been able to master the idea of polyamory in a sexual sense without some degree of agony or whatever upon separation, you know, in other words. When people go into that phase of the relationship, that you have to be aware of the fact that there's, when you come apart there, it's it becomes stickier. You know, it's just kind of takes,
it's another level.
Kind of tears away some part that thought it was going to be knit together forever, and that's sort of like that part of it. But there are people who also still feel that those kinds of journeys are useful and necessary, and that's all perfect. I mean, there's no one set formula, because we all are different in our orientations and our needs and our journey, what our journey is supposed to be.
Yeah, right.
Excuse me, I have to cough. I'll be right back.
All right, no problem. And I want to give out the phone number. You know, we still have a few paragraphs to talk about, but Daniel really wants to take calls tonight. So the number to talk in, if you have a question, 646-929-2084. There's nobody in the queue right now, but if you're interested in asking a question about Transportal, call in and we'll be happy to put the talk on hold and we'll take the question. And in the meantime, we'll just keep going through the rest of the rest of the article.
And we never run out of things to talk about, you and I, it seems.
Which is why I'm putting it out there, exactly.
And I have to laugh, there has to be a reason I had to cough just after all that declaration I said about relationships and sex. just like, okay, we're moving on now.
You're so cute. you segue beautifully, my friend. You segue beautifully.
Say, excuse me, I got to go cough.
But we have passed the top of the hour, and that was my intention to let the people know. So okay, that's,
let us hear you
good.
If you're out there. It would be wonderful to just experience you here in our midst. So
yeah,
don't be afraid
to
either share what you're feeling or to ask a question or whatever you want to do.
There you go. And I'm telling you, talking to Daniel is really it's a beautiful experience. I highly recommend it.
Now, there's a spot here that says, we simply must say this again. Do not judge the integrity or extent of your travel within the multiverse by how many exotic experiences you can remember. Just because you don't have memory of rising out of your body doesn't mean that you don't astrally travel. In fact, those who have the most definitive, tangible experiences are usually those who need them in order to believe or to help others believe. The rest of you have already accepted that you are astral knots and simply don't need more proof. That's an important thing. Another thing, I think we skipped over this idea of moving mountains, where they say you bring the mountain to Mohammed or you bring Mohammed to the mountain. That's the idea is where you have the archetypal figures, the avatars, the teachers, the guides. Alice Bailey had such a field day back in the 30s or 40s with her works about the Ascended Masters and the Great White Brotherhood, and all of that came into being.
Okay.
Very akin to the study in mythology of the gods, goddesses, archetypes, those kinds of things. They give us an example of divinity and expanded ability and awareness that we can sort of have a distance from, some degree of perspective. If we get too close to it, again, that radiance puts us into a state of sometimes insanity, as some might call it. I just call it accelerated beingness. And,
I like that.
they have this thing in psychiatry called messianic delusions and various other things where, you think you are Christ, and of course you are. You're part of the cosmic Christ. But so then is the entire universe. the thing that really gets it hard is when you try to take the whole definition on your separated self. Then all of a sudden, you know, in a fit of ecstasy, you can pick up a Volkswagen, and then suddenly the fit leaves you, and you're standing there holding a Volkswagen. And a Volkswagen, you know, or maybe even a semi-truck. For Superman is nothing, but for you, all of a sudden, you phase-shifted back into your mortal self, and it's like, ah, you know.
Yeah, come crashing down on yourself.
So when we bring the mountains to us, we fragment off a part of self perceptually. We allow that to say, okay, that's sort of me, but it's really super me, and I don't know if I can really relate to it, but I like to experience it. You see a spaceship, you have an encounter with an extraterrestrial being who steps into your bedroom. You talk to a guide, you have a dream, you do these various things. All of them are simple distortions of perception that enable you to maintain your personal ruse of separation while you experience this wonderland of physicality and separation before returning to the unity of being. And that's usually just a touchstone. It's just a place to clear your palate for the next feast, next course of the feast that you're going to feed yourself when you go back into the duality again.
Wait,
or
what is it?
Whatever
is
else
touchstone?
There is. Excuse me?
What were you referencing as a touchstone?
Oneness, you know, the oneness vibe where you're able to go where all is one. A lot of people think of it as a destination, but the guys mentioned, they say, no, it's really only a touchstone. Because there has to be a survival of that sense of self for you to be able to experience what we call the evolution of soul as you go through.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. I mean, it's not the whole thing, but it's part of it. You wouldn't want to miss that.
Right on.
Some people would because they're pretty disgusted with having to deal with physical issues. I talk to some people are going, I just can't wait to take this thing off. You know, some people actually act that out, you know, and we're seeing more and more folks just jumping into the void.
Yeah, huh.
I used to wonder, when they would show pictures at the Jim Morrison concerts where people on LSD would just jump off the balcony into the theater.
Yeah.
I used to wonder, is there a universe where they don't fall to the ground, but there's one where they actually fly? I mean, everything fragments out into, they see a body here on the ground and he looks pretty smashed up to me, but is there another universe where he just flew and went right out the window like Peter Pan?
Yeah, sliders.
Exactly.
Yeah, right on.
We don't get to see that part. We only see what we need to see. And that's really interesting. And that's where we talk about the tunnel and the gateway, which we call death, you know. Is death death, or is it simply a transfer of consciousness from one context to another? Camera one switches to camera five, and we get to see things from a completely, and that one is in the studio down the hall. While the people left back in camera, where camera one is, notice that the camera just kind of turns off and stops, and they go,
right.
Oh, the show is over. No, it's just down the block, you know. I'm reading a book now by a friend on Facebook who wrote it, this wonderful story about her mother and her mother's passing, and the title of the book is called Just Because You're Dead Doesn't Mean You're Gone.
Right.
It's by Sandy Foster Morrison. She's a therapist in San Antonio.
Nice.
And she sent me her book saying, I feel good that my book is in your hands, so I'm reading that now. And it's kind of neat her mother was quite a pistol. And the night she died, it was like somebody called and said, she's gone. And so she went out and looked up at the night sky and said, Mama, where are you? And Mama certainly revealed herself, I guess, from what I can see in the book.
Nice.
I'm waiting to see exactly how she does that because I just started it.
Oh, nice.
The night after, my mother passed rather suddenly. She was taking care of my dad, who was in the process of dying of cancer. I was back in the early 80s. She died near Christmas time. It was like December 14. And I flew down for the funeral arrangements and for the funeral, and then I stayed with Dad till he passed.
Okay.
And that was like 5 months, and it was a really incredible experience of open heart regeneration of our relationship, which had kind of fallen by the wayside, which it does, you know, when you're in your mid-30s.
Yeah.
You're on with your life. I had kids, you know, I'd been going through what I'd been going through, and so you kind of lose touch. And my boys are in their mid-30s, and, you know, I have to give them lots of space because they have their lives. Jeffrey is much more, the special one that I talked about, is much more communicative and has more time, wants more time. But the special times I have with the younger one, who's much more what we would think of as, what do you call it, normal, if you want to call that, in his orientation. He's got a busy life. He works in film and does things. And, you know, I'm happy anytime we can get together, but I'm aware of the fact that he's got a thing going on, you know, and it's important. But anyway, we were able to repair that during that time. But the night after my mother passed, I was laying in her bed next to him, and thinking to myself, my God, he sounds like he's going to die tonight because of the way he was breathing. I was laying there thinking that. Suddenly she came upon me and filled my entire being. And it was like I knew it because I could feel her. I could experience her. I could smell her.
Yeah.
And I said, Mom? And all I heard, it was spoke to my heart. It was, I love you. It's going to be all right. Goodbye. And that was her way. Now, my sister was much more clairvoyant, clairaudient. She would have many visitations from my mother. I've only had a few. And that's the difference in our orientations. My sister actually had visits from my ex-wife after she passed. And that was interesting because she said one day she was slapping my face so that I would wake up so she could give me a message.
Theoretically, she was slapping you?
Etheric, she was slapping my sister. My sister said, your ex-wife was here, and she was slapping my face when I was waking up.
Okay.
I said, oh, boy, yeah.
Exactly.
That sounds like it. Anyway, that was such an experience, though, to be with my mother in that moment. It was like more of a communion than I've ever felt with her. And then she was gone, and it was like you had that experience. We passed through a portal there.
Right, right.
And so we met in a place, in a place that was neither this nor that, but something of both.
Yeah.
And that's that decompression chamber in the middle.
Yeah, right on, right on.
So then they talk about another way to log on to the multiverse is through what we call the movies or magazines, TV, and other forms of visual, auditory, and kinesthetic art and information. And we refer to those as the dreams of the mass mind. It's like, yes, people receive inspiration if they're open to it, and they'll write down something. And many of them will talk about the idea, when I wrote that song, or when I said that, or when I wrote that book, or when I painted that picture, it was like it wasn't me doing it. It was like it was just doing itself. Bob Dylan used to talk about that all the time. You know, people would say, I'm not the voice of my generation. You know, they would say, you're the voice of a generation. He says, no.
Right.
He says, yeah, I just write these songs. They're just there, and I write these songs. And he shook his head in wonder that people would take him to be that. Fortunately, the good part about it is he was able to keep his sense of self through all that and not have his head turned by what other people thought of him. He allowed his own sense of personal genius not be overshadowed by public genius or public accolades.
Yeah, right on, right on.
So the dreams of the mass mind are really the product of our collective self. That's thinking and pondering and dreaming everywhere and everywhen we go. And these wonderful gifted people have the receptivity to take those fragments and put them together into something that's meaningful and timely. And it either hits or it doesn't, but it's interesting because some things that don't hit right away down the line become classics, you know.
Yeah.
And then there are some things that start out as classics and stay classics, and then there are some things that are just, they raise a big hubbub and then they're gone.
Yeah.
But that's a fickleness that happens in the mass mind, but it doesn't have to happen to the artist. The artist can continue on doing his or her art.
Right on.
And not allow
right
that
on
to be effective. For them, it's a very organic personal process.
Exactly. That's the key point. I have a question, though. Do you think that on some level, when the culture experiences certain things in movies, that, like, I've heard that by experiencing, like, these 2012 end-of-the-world scenarios, that because we experience them in movies, we don't have to experience them, you know, in what we would so-called call the third dimension?
Well, and again, I would be a little guarded about using the idea of having to experience them versus choosing. In other words, rather than having a whole plate of stew, you can have just a cup of stew, and say, "Good, I've had stew now." So if you were to look at CNN and you were to see what's going on, I mean, there are parts of the world that are experiencing the end of the world right now.
And if you look at these, what do they call it,
C-SPAN and some of these sports stations where they have those screens where they have all the different little boxes where it's, you know, this channel's on this here and this channel's on that. You can watch about five different football games at the same time.
Right.
That same thing happens when we look into the newspapers or CNN and we see, okay, over here in Indonesia, there's been a tsunami, and over here there's Katrina, and over here there's this asteroid hit the Earth, and over here, you know. And meanwhile, from where you're at, you get to experience one cup of that instead of have the whole that be your whole thing. Whereas other people will use that as an exit point. And they'll go out with a bang, you know, and it's very hard too, by the way. I don't know if we've talked about this or not. Well, I was doing a workshop in New Jersey one time, and I had more women in the workshop that particular day, and many of them had relatives or had experienced 9/11.
Okay.
And we were talking about this idea of you create your own reality, and the inevitable question came up. You know, how is it that my nephew, who was in the Twin Towers and calling me from a cell phone, crying and terrified about what would happen, who died in the Twin Towers, how is it that he created that? And, you know, what can you say to someone like that, to Auntie who's lost her dear nephew under that kind of a circumstance?
Yeah, of course.
It's where you have to really be both the experiential and the conceptual. I mean, someone from the West Coast who had a distance from that's where the philosophizing goes on and the rationalization and trying to harmonize it into some kind of a, what does this all mean? Because you've got room to do that, whereas if buildings are falling down around you and you're covered with ash, what do you do? And so I felt the guides coming up inside saying, the only thing we can experience right now is your sense of loss around this. And there's nothing we could say to you that would replace that at this point in time. In other words, I could have gone into a very left-brain discussion about that, and that oftentimes the ego self is not aware completely of the contracts that it signed and so on and so forth. But how could you say that about a young boy on a cell phone when his voice probably, I guess that was like 5 years later, this was 2004, 5 years later his voice is still ringing in her ears. How could I tell her that? And why would I even want to? Why would I even care?
All I could do
is just say, I reach out to you and I feel what you're going through, but I could never fully understand it because I wasn't there. And that's all that we really needed to say about that at that point in time. But now when we look at it, when we look at it from a tech standpoint, yes, there are contracts that are formed and there are pre-incarnate, if you want to look at it from that viewpoint, out of the simultaneous now, contracts and itineraries that are laid out. And this brings up the old question about, is all death suicide if you create your own reality?
That's a great question.
Are you the one who flips the switch and says, okay, I'm out of here? And there are some situations where that seems to be obviously true, and there are other situations where it looks like the person is clawing and fighting to stay here but is taken anyway. And that, too, is an experience. It's what the soul comes here fragments off a body and a personality to do is to have experiences and record them, transmit them back to the center of all that is, and present them in what we call the cosmic video store,
mm-hmm.
so that people can experience each other's journeys. When you check out a video from the Cosmic Video Store, it's the kind of a thing you could climb right into.
Yeah.
The kind of a thing where you don't just look at it, you're there. You're each character, you're experiencing it from any viewpoint you want.
Now that's happening, because I've always heard that's what happens in the review, in the life review in between lives.
It certainly can.
So, but you're saying that that's actually, that there's parts of us that are experiencing that simultaneously as me and you are doing a radio show right now. You know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it can happen in all formats. There is no one format. I was able to listen to a speaker on Friday night, a fellow who just wrote a book called The Afterlife Interviews, where he's somebody you might want to have on your show. I think his name is Jeffrey Marks.
Jeffrey Marks, okay.
Looked like a very interesting book, and he made a very credible presentation of research that he's done through the interviews that he, I guess he had a tape recorder, a digital tape recorder that he uses in some of his sittings, where he's able to turn this tape recorder on. You can't hear anything in the room at the time. But later, when you turn replay it back, there's actually, you hear a voice talking.
Oh, wow.
That they use digital technology, very much like the orbs and the digital pictures.
Okay, right on.
And they use digital technology to communicate, and he had people do a sitting with him and experience or talk about the ones who passed over, and people would show up, and then they would ask questions of the entity about what it's like to be over there. And so the book is all about the answers that these entities give. And some of them are really quite unified, not too surprisingly, because they're all being funneled through this universe called Jeffrey Marks. And we have a way of unifying anything we need. It doesn't make it less true. It just makes it more personalized.
Right on.
So, but it seemed like a very interesting book, and he was a very interesting speaker. And they do have these sittings where people get together publicly, and he, very much like John Edwards, if you're familiar with him.
I am familiar with him.
Yeah, he's pretty famous for his talking to the dead. And again,
yeah.
You know, what we're actually talking to, from my experience, is fragments of that energy that's left behind, almost like recordings, videos that we get to play later on.
Right.
And so that there's aspects of the soul that move on beyond the veil, and there are some parts that are left back here, almost like a time capsule or a keepsake. You remember Superman, in the first Superman movie, he would go to the place where his capsule landed, and he would take these crystals out.
Okay.
Put the crystal in the machine or whatever they did there in the ice palace. And
Each of the crystals would
have images talking to him about the history of his planet and what happened and what his assignment is here on Earth.
Huh.
And you might say it's the same thing, only it's just, you don't have to have a physical symbol for it. It just happens there. And so when a quote, ghost appears, and I have been actually walked through by an entity, a ghost. When I had one of my offices, we had a house that it was originally a house converted into an office, but it used to be the home of an old woman who still liked to hang out there.
Okay.
And so she was she became kind of a friend of the work.
Nice.
We were doing
nice.
Bioenergy body work and rehab therapy and things like that, so she really liked the healing environment.
Okay.
And I would have interactions with her, and so would others too. You could hear her walking at night, things like that upstairs.
Nice.
And I'm not the kind of a guy who wants to throw somebody out who's lived there before me. You know, just make an agreement with them, you know.
Right on.
So anyway, how did we get into that? I don't know. Because nobody's calling in. Where are you guys? Are you there?
Well, we started talking about our mom's passing and
9/11.
And yeah, no, it's all good. It's all good.
It all goes where it needs to go.
Exactly. Exactly. I was looking at the paragraph, so, and I'm going to jump past abbreviants into the leaps of faith. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we've kind of talked about the proof, and I like talking about leaps of faith, because this is kind of where one thing I'm very excited about this talk is the magic seems, from my perspective, it seems to be here when we, you know, kind of put, you know, when we're willing to jump.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like, it doesn't show up before that. We really got to be willing to, you know, and it's interesting because what me and Janine have been talking about on the show is kind of the willingness to die.
Yeah.
But from the personality standpoint, from the belief standpoint, even though it will feel very similar from a fearful state to an actual physical death.
Right.
But it's really, and I guess on some level, I think it is. And but we're not talking about the killing of the ego. That's not just about, you know, our limitations and what we believe, you know, what science tells us, and, you know, just the magic. And, you know, if you could share, you know, your perspective on that, that would be great.
Well, and by passing over abbreviants, we don't want to go into it too deeply because I think you've hit on something beautiful here.
Okay.
Abbreviants is basically the word means how few words can you use to express something and still get the idea across.
Okay.
So instead of a long narrative, how short can you make it? Same thing is true about a concept. Do you have to spell it out for someone, or can you say a word or even a glance and have them get that? And
okay,
the concept
okay.
of abbreviance is sort of an economy of thought and economy of motion that enables you to do a whole lot with a whole little. With a little.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about a leap of faith, you will basically, part of what you go through when you're ready to make a leap of faith is there's usually some sort of disillusion of life as it was.
Mm.
And you get to the place where you let go of those attachments because you realize that is no more. And then there's also the implantation of desire, or at least curiosity, that says nothing going on here. What might be going on over there?
Mm.
And a lot of people think that, you know, death is the greatest fear in a person's life. But in my experience, the greatest fear is total absolute boredom. You know, when we talk
okay.
about being bored to death, I mean, Lord,
right. Oh,
that's
right
why
on.
Some people are, you know, some of us are so addicted to drama that we literally would go crazy if we don't have our fix of drama.
Mm.
So we go out and make some.
Right on, right on.
But there is a certain disillusion that takes place of possessions, attachments, connections, sense of purpose. And then there's planting new seeds, new possibilities, and that's where they call this RIP, the realm of infinite possibility. another
it.
Version of those letters,
exactly.
The realm of infinite possibility. And when you make your leap of faith, you're basically casting off your old clothes, going naked into the RIP, and coming out the other side dressed or not.
Okay.
You remember that movie, what was the movie, where the time traveler's wife, where every time he traveled, he'd spontaneously travel,
yes!
But he'd always show
yes!
up naked. He'd always show up naked.
That was a great movie, yes. Yeah. Well, and he kept going, you know, I guess he kept hoping to land by stores where he could get clothing.
Exactly, you know, or he'd show up in the middle of a dinner party. It's like, ah.
Exactly. Or he had his daughter leaving him clothes in the outside in the forest. So,
exactly.
But it wasn't his daughter, actually. It was his wife when she was young.
Yeah.
Right on.
So the guides had this wonderful phrase. They said, do you think that you are something? Then you're attached to what you think you are. Do you think you are nothing? Then you're attached to what you think you aren't. It's only that you when you realize that you are everything that you can finally let go.
Right on.
Holding on has been your safety harness while living within these physical dimensions, but it can become a prison for those who find they cannot let go. Do you doubt that Earth is a prison? Why then do you think that its basic elements of construction are called cells?
Mm.
Now, they went on later to say it's not necessary. It can turn from a prison to a prism just with a change of thought. So, again, you know, these walls that seem to hem me in could also focus me into a different place. And I can shoot through the roof quicker than you can say goodbye.
Yeah.
But the point being is that you may not be able to take all your stuff with you. I used to love when Billy Graham would give his little speeches. He used to say, I've attended, officiated at a lot of funerals, particularly rich people. And he said, I've never once seen a hearse with a U-Haul trailer behind it. He said, people are always querying, how much did he leave? He said, I know what he left. He left it all. I mean, the guy had a gift of oratory. He's got a gift of oratory that's pretty unmatched.
Yeah,
but, I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. When you're making your leap of faith, it's usually stimulated at first by a disillusion of what you thought you were, and so that you can get re-illusioned with who you think you could be.
Right on.
And by the way, you know, the 3D dimension is built upon this idea, this conceptual idea called I Am. It's even called, referred to as the name of the God who runs this universe, the I Am presence. But when you move through the portals, the conceptual changes to suppose I were. You know, instead of saying I am this, you go suppose I were that, and immediately a portal opens and your consciousness goes off in a fragment. You just shoot off a fragment. Suddenly you're the captain of a huge sailing ship in the 1800s in the middle of a storm. And just, you know, you're standing on the bow being victorious over those seas. And then you're back and goes, yeah, suppose I were. They even used an analogy one time about suppose. If you remember those stockings they used to sell called suppose. They were support hose. And they had this kind of stretchy material. They had this stretchy, porous material that could, you know, you could get several little piglets into one, you know, if you really stuff them in there.
Okay.
So they said it's like that, you know, that kind of astral body has that kind of malleability when you suppose yourself, whereas if you're an I am, you're like an oak, you know, you're unbendable, whereas the other becomes like a willow. And it can bend and shape. So they go, when you travel in the multiverse, you got to travel light because that's the only thing that can go.
Right on. Right on.
A little shaft of light. I wrote this poem once that said, we ride the waves with nerves of steel. We cannot speak the things we feel. Our surfboards made from shafts of light. They carry us across the night. You know.
Nice.
And
that's beautiful.
It's just poetic stimulus for the mind to go, yeah, you know, it's like tickling you with a feather, and you go, I'm ready, let's go.
That's so true. Oh, we have a caller. Caller, area code 386, if you want to come on the air, you press 1. Okay, there you go. All right, right on, area code 386, you're live on the air with Daniel Jacob.
Hello there.
Hello, Daniel and Goldie, this is Art.
Hey, it's Art!
Hey, Art, how you doing? We've been talking about you all night. We've been talking about art and literature and
exactly.
All.
Exactly. Right. Yep.
How you doing and how are the boys?
We're doing absolutely fine. That's part of what I wanted to talk about. Just I don't want to keep you too long, but when my mother passed away, it was absolutely incredible because I walked over and told them they stopped what they were doing. They were so much in joy. The energy just went on and on and on because they knew that she no longer had to suffer here. They know that she was more than her physical body.
Uh-huh.
They understand that. And it was just incredible. We talked for a long, long time. I mean, they just totally quit what they were doing. And we
Those who aren't familiar with Art's background, he has these two wonderful, magnificent star children, children of the New Earth, whatever you want to call them, living with him. And he's devoted himself as a dad to being that support for them and that solid rock for them to experience their own genius and share it with him and us.
Me and Art are very good friends, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
you probably have him.
Oh,
on,
yeah.
He'd
yeah.
come on the Reconnections Network when we were doing that too. And
yeah.
Always nice to hear from Art.
Yeah.
But I
Art's
knew,
fantastic.
like a little while later in that day, Josh and I were sitting together, and we were talking about that because of what we wanted to do. And I visually saw her over Josh's shoulder behind him, just clapping her hands because she was so impressed of our what we were thinking, what we were talking about, and our feelings.
Yeah.
Right.
It was absolutely incredible.
And what's so cool about that is it gets encapsulated and put into its own little piece of art, if you will.
Right.
And that also goes to the Cosmic Video Store, where people will, when they're ready and get into that space, are able to experience just that same experience.
Right.
The only requirement for checking out those videos is that you become one with them. You know, that you're at a space of oneness, because otherwise you're kind of a cosmic voyeur.
Right.
And that's not the idea. So again, it's
you
all safe and sealed.
It's just funny. You
but
know
I
me.
Can
my
picture
mind
that.
Is now,
I've had some conversations with both my sons that I wish, you know, I could have dipped it in bronze and hung it on the wall because it was so vibrant and alive. And even ones where they were sharing anger or something like that, if it's pure and it's from the center, it's exciting to just have a space where of safety to share and feel.
Yes. It seems most appropriate to actually express that in these times because the polarity seems so, you know, these are the best of times and the worst of times. So learning to express both sides of it. Yeah. Because I think anything we suppress inevitably becomes the big, you know, the big monster in the wardrobe closet.
Right,
you know, it's gonna come out one way or the other. So, you know, having a safe place to express it is, you know, that's the beginning of us owning all of it, all of ourselves.
But you're doing that. You're allowing this openness, Goldie. You and Daniel both. You know, because he's done the same thing.
Right on. Thank you.
Yeah, you have to allow for it because some find it to be too challenging. And I must say that there have been times in my life when I wouldn't be open to hear what they had to feel or had to say. And there were times when I look back that I did put a lid on it, you know, in my own way.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had a serious conversation with my younger son one time about changing the tenor of our relationship so that we, you know, had a different way of relating than we had developed over the course of our previous part of our life. And we've gone through phases of life, and that on all of that, it's been beautiful.
Right.
And it's nice now, you know, we're going into a new phase again. So, and he's just, he's even turning me on to what he was excited about, rap music and hip-hop back in the day when he was doing it. I was been stimulated by that by a young rapper down in L.A. who I've been talking to recently about her experience and her art and the way she's interpreting through that energy, because it's a very interesting medium, very vibrant medium to be touching young star kids, you might say, who are in certain environments. It's like a language all of its own and a way of doing it.
Right on.
So he's been giving me insights into that, and then so has she, and it's like adding new dimensions to my life. You know, it's no longer just the Beatles and Creedence Clearwater. Now it's all the new folks too.
Yeah.
But you got to allow it. If you don't allow it, then you miss out. You miss several sections of the movie.
And well, and your boys, Art, your boys are into, you know, the music as well.
Music.
And
Yeah.
It just seems like right now your boys, especially because of how they were raised, and I mean, with, you know, the organic aspect as well as the freedom. And that is, you know, it's interesting because free at last is the final paragraph. it almost appears, you know, from my perspective, you guys are kind of living, what were you calling that, the future, there was a future block? What would be the paradox of that, the future, you know, the future flow? That Art and
right.
the Boy seem, you know what I mean, seem to be living
yeah.
in a, you know, in a
well,
frequency
future shock.
That is...
You were talking about future
oh,
shock.
Oh, future shock, right.
Yeah, that was Alvin Toffler's book. Yeah, instead of future shock, now we have a springboard into the future. Where
right,
we're to the place where we're going, yahoo, let's do it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm ready
yeah.
to go now, and you're ready to make a leap.
Yep.
And that's where they talk about channeling your life, where, you know, what a person does when you channel is you begin to believe enough in what's coming through you that you're no longer interested in editing it, no matter what it is. You
absolutely,
know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've lived that. That's my life.
When a
that
person,
is your life.
When a person stands up on a stage or and sits in a group of people and you just start, you know, singing from your soul,
right?
And you don't know what's going to come out of your mouth and you don't particularly care. I mean, there has to be, again, a dissolution of your attachments to reputation, your attachments to a lot of things. I've had people come to channeling sessions where there was a sense of strangeness on their face when they saw me do some of the vocal affects and things that were expressive of the energies that I was running at that time.
Yes, yeah.
And it's sort of, in many ways, it's like depicting a movie script. You're getting a script from the inner planes, and you're trying to act out what you see written on the page or what you feel in the energy.
Right.
You're trying to translate that into something so that people understand your inner experience, but you're bringing your inner experience out. It's like a birthing.
Right.
And who would like to have an entire audience watch them as they bring a child into the world? You know, it's like, I remember that.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know how they do that on those reality shows.
I remember on Grey's Anatomy, I remember the Nazi who was birthing her child and, one of her students was trying to coach her through, and he was watching he says, there's the child's heads. And she said, I forget what the name of the guy was because I haven't seen the show in a long time, but it was like a Irish name, Nick something or other. Anyway, she says, stop looking at my vajayjay. And he goes, yes, ma'am.
Well, God,
but one minute before that, she was screaming in pain and clutching onto his hand. But then when she got control of herself, she said, stop watching. But I mean, that's what you're doing. You're standing there when you're channeling your life. You're no longer caring who watches. You're just letting the afterbirth and everything just flow, you know. And the
right,
baby comes
right
out.
On.
You
right.
know, it can be messy, but that's what you know. What we call active spiritual stuff. There's stuff that's, you know, that's hammered out in private, and then it's put into a presentation mode, and it's all
yeah.
got all the frills and all the stuff. But then there's this when you're out in the woods and it's the full moon and you're feeling that sense of urgency and you're just in your moment and you don't care what's going on.
But, yeah.
That's where it's at, you know. People take
so
drugs
like,
to get there
yeah.
sometimes. They do.
It's like everything here I have built. I haven't had a job since 1974. I've just helped people. And everything that I've built came through me in that quiet time, how to do it. And when people come visit, which isn't real often, but I walk them through.
Yet, Art.
Yeah.
No,
they're coming. If you build
address,
it, they will
them.
Come.
Yeah,
I
got to broadcast
them.
Your address, and all of a sudden all those cars will be coming down the road.
Yeah, no, let's not give out the address yet. Let it happen organically.
Give out the address. We want it to happen of its own accord.
Yeah, right on. Please continue.
All this is very, very energy efficient. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it just came to me, and I put that out when I tell this I'm not like a carpenter or a
electrician.
All those things.
Yeah. Architect.
Construction.
Architect. Right. That's what I was looking
yeah.
for.
Okay.
But it's an amazing bit of work, but it just came through me, you know, and I tell that. I tell that out, you know.
Yeah.
I express that truth. I did this. Anybody can do, you know, if they listen to their heart.
You're right on.
What you need will come to you.
Listen to your art, folks. Art is telling you.
Yep.
Daniel, you are a nut. Art, I love you. Thank you. I'm so glad you called in. Really. Just
well, nice to hear from you, buddy.
Call,
yep.
Pardon?
Okay.
Yeah, because
yes,
we're just getting ready to wrap it up. That's it,
right.
But thank you so much for calling, Art.
Well, that's why I waited till at the end to let you do what you were bringing there to express.
Do what we do.
Absolutely.
Well, I love when you call in, early, middle, or the end. I love when you call in. Thank you. I love your support. Yeah.
Have a lovely evening.
Take care. Say hi to the boys.
I shall
do it. Say hi to Josh and John. All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye now. So we do have 4 minutes. The free at last. If we could kind of just quickly, we can't leave that out. I mean, that would
be. No, and you don't want to. I mean, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
Exactly. Or Whoopi Goldberg, when she left the house and put up her hand, it was like, you will never do that to me again.
Oh, yeah. You mean in Color Purple?
Color Purple.
Yeah, that is.
I have that as a freedom moment. From
everything you do to me, already done to you.
Yeah, that's the line. Right on, Daniel. Exactly.
Now, you know, people will oftentimes say, how do you know that what you're saying is true? And I once asked that about the guys. How do I know that what's coming through here is true? And they say, you have it backwards. First you know, then you know how you know. Thinking was never meant to be part of the process of universal design. It was great for reminiscence, but it has no place in moving forward. As Jung said, as in the quote that I was reading, he said, you don't solve these things through conscious thought. That's rumination, that's pondering it later. He says these things literally are a result of your subconscious, unconscious mind dropping these things in. And what are they? Those are your reconnections, you see. Those are your parts, the bridge concepts that they drop in, and all of a sudden you're able to shoot out of that portal, go through that conduit, and get to the new place. And then you build what's called an astral bridge between the you that's here and the you that's in all these other different locations. And if we ever get to part three, that's what it's called, building astral.
Oh, I hope we get to part. Yeah, I'm going to stay on this. So my goal is to, you know, got to finish this. I mean, because we're having a great journey. Why wouldn't we finish it?
Exactly.
So, okay, so the ending of this is this, I mean, so can you give like a closing statement that leaves it open for part three but closes tonight's?
Yes. Well, it says now. Now is the timing for your journeys of discovery. The tides are rising as we speak. Hop aboard the next wave and off you go. Believe where it is that you seem to travel. That's important, believing in your experience. And believe what it is that seems to help you come back. In truth, each piece of your journey joins with all others to create the very fabric of your existence. And it is these very seams that bind the fabric together to form a symbolic coat of many colors, or what they call as the tapestry of your experience. So it seems, S-E-W, it seems, and so shall it ever be. So the idea of being free of your doubts, your hesitancy, your sense of, is this real, isn't it real? Everything is real everywhere it appears, but not everything is experienced at once. It comes in sequences that are set up by us, just like a person would stack pictures that he's going to flip through and make an animated movie. If you want to, you could reshuffle the pictures and flip the other direction, and it would be fine. It's just a different sequence, you know. So we're the ones who get to lay this out, and we don't create our universe from nothing. We create it from the everything that's already there, and then we pare it back to just those things we want to look at and study. And so when we stop thinking so much and start living, the living part is something that's really done spontaneously, sensorially, and with a sense of a bit of abandon, not too much, but just a bit, enough so that you can hold your ship stable so it doesn't fly into a mountain. But but you want to you want to be like Harry Potter when he first got on that broomstick. He just took off.
That's true. Right on. Okay.
You don't want to be like Ron. You know, Ron was turning upside down, and or whoever it was. Yeah. No, it was the little. That was the little chubby kid. I think I saw that the other day, and he was turning over and over, and I was, oh, having a terrible time, you know. But Harry knew how to, just what to do, and that's how you want to be if you can. But even
well,
if
and
you turn
can,
over and
right?
over and smash into a mountain, it's all right too.
You know, right on. And the key is when we know we can, like knowingness really makes the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you move from knowing from a place of believing or thinking,
right.
knowing because you're a creature of the multiverse. In the multiverse, there's a universe that honors and embodies every belief imaginable and then some. And we skip from universe to universe. So whatever seems to be happening is real in that universe. But it doesn't mean you have to stay there. You can say, do I like this, or would I like to turn left and go down to the other studio and watch that movie? And once
right.
we get to a place where we get to do that more volitionally and more empowered way, we won't feel like we're lost without a map.
Right on. Right on. Beautiful share. We're still streaming, so this will be on the archives. Can you tell people where people can find you if you want to share your new Facebook
page?
Yes,
yes, the experience. I'm on Facebook under Daniel Jacob. I'm also I do a lot of stuff out there, and then also on www.reconnections.net, and just go to the index page. You'll come up there. You'll see a picture of our castle, our great little castle, which they actually used for the filming of The Highlander. It's on the Isle of – it joins Edinburgh and the Isle of Skye.
Oh, nice.
And it's called Castle Aileen Donan, means the Isle of St. Donan.
Okay.
And that's our kind of our host castle. Whenever we've gone over there, that's where we love to go.
Very
and
nice.
Then inside on the index page, you just hit enter, and you'll go to the index page, and there will be lots of articles, lots of things to read. We've got an archive full of stuff for people who – it's fun, you know, when I talk to folks years after maybe 5 years of reading the articles, and they start talking in language, Reconnections language. It's really
nice.
I've never met them, but all of a sudden it's like we're old friends.
Nice. Yeah,
the
that's
Star
the beauty
Children
of
www.thestarchildren.com, and that's devoted entirely to the new kids that come in. So that's another place you can go, and you'll see writings and stuff for you and for your kids.
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you very much. We will be doing a part three whenever the time is divine, because this is truly a fascinating journey. You're taking all of us on, and you know, and everybody's loving it, you know, including me. I hope you're enjoying yourself as well. Cause
well, just like when I go to the castle, I love to go to or the Standing Stones of Callanish. You know, I've been there a couple times, and every time
okay.
I go, I get a new sense of it. And even if you take a tour there, it's all the more fun because you get to watch the surprise on people's face or maybe the recognition that they've been there too. And so I like to do these because they are like, you know, visiting special places on the earth.
Right on. Right on.
Thank
well,
you for
I,
having me, Goldie. And it's been
I
wonderful.
Deeply appreciate it. Thank you for being here. There's so much love here. Everybody, thank you for calling in, Art. Thank you for listening, Janine and Simon and all the wonderful people that are going to grab this in the archives.
And don't get blown away, okay, in your weather.
Oh, well, you know, it is
ride
what it
the wind
is.
Ride with
know.
Nerves of steel, but...
if no. I wake up in Oz tomorrow, I'll be okay with that. I really will.
That's where we get the name Osgood.
You
know, all good in Osgood.
All good and odds good. Right on, my friend.
Good night, everybody.
All right, take care.
You've been experiencing Another Reality Show with Golden Hawk. Another Reality Show is live Thursdays 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, or listen and be enlightened anytime that works for you. Questions or comments, email the show, goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. That's goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. Also, visit us on the web at www.anotherrealityshow.com. Remember, all you rule breakers, misfits, troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists, everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what is right with you. You see things others don't. You're hardwired to change the world. And unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible and you were born to be a revolutionary. And here at Another Reality Show, we salute you. Stay amazing and keep on flying. Good night.